Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men
and talk about it.
I am so excited for you guys to join us for another episode of this podcast about Mad Men. It is, of course, called Pod Yourself a Gun, a rewatch podcast, season 3, Mad Yourself a Man, about Mad Men. If you can't,
as everyone knows.
Yes. And if you can't find it in your local app store, that's on you, because it's very easy to search all those words. You're eventually going to find it. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to this, I assume you already have found it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for searching and finding this podcast. Give us 5 stars and a review at your local podcast store. Tell your friends about it. Tell your mom about it.
Just keep shouting 5 stars and hope someone hears you.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you have family that's like, oh, I love Mad Men and I love guys, well, tell them, well, there's this podcast where a bunch of guys are talking about Mad Men. And that'll be helpful for us. And also, if you want to hear more of us every week, you go to patreon.com/broadcast and you can hear me and Vince and other people, you know, talking about other shit.
Type in the promo code. I like guys.
Yeah, I like guys. Type in that promo code. That's our promo code. Thank you to everyone who has emailed us, patiently waiting for the show to come back. To those of you who are still mad at the fact that it took this long for season 4 to start, hey, fuck you. All right. I don't care that you're a patron. All right? Because we do the show for us. You know what you are? You know what you are?
You're just a man in a room with a checkbook.
That's right. That's all you are to us, Piggy. So write that check, eat that slop, and do it on our schedule.
I'm just kidding. Oink style.
Yeah, oink style. I'm just kidding. I love you. Please don't ever leave. Today,
we don't just watch Mad Men. We create them.
That's right. We create Mad Men. Today we're going to be talking about from season 4 of Mad Men, episode 3, The Good News. And for this episode, we have a wonderful guest. This person is an OG friend of the Fraught, an OG Fraught caster, an OG podcaster, a man who loves sport, a man who loves content, a man who is more than a man. He's a hero. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, Matt Ufford is here.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up, dog?
That was such a warm introduction.
Yeah.
The best one you've done.
I'm going to play that for my kids. Be like, this is how you're supposed to treat me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever I walk into a room.
This is the respect I demand.
I deserve this.
My son told me he's going to cut my wiener off. So unless your kids must be way different than mine.
Yeah. It's crazy that your son said that to you.
Yeah, he does that.
What? I need to ask about that, because how does he? He knows you have a wiener, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He's old enough that he knows that you have a wiener. What made him go with, I'm going to cut your wiener off?
I don't know. Any combination of like wieners, butts, boobs, and violence. That's sort of his. Sometimes he'll say, "I'm going to bite your wiener off," or "I'm going to eat your wiener."
Well, that's not good.
Yeah, no. I try to discourage that, but he doesn't say that.
Does he say it in public?
Not yet.
Okay. Well,
I mean, he's still at the age where I could be like, oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Kids these days.
His Uncle Matt Lieb taught him that one.
As soon as he turns 25 and he's still like, I'm going to bite my dad's dick off. You're just like,
I'll get him a podcast.
Matt Alford, does your kids ever threaten to bite your dick off?
No, my son, who is 9, is a very astute English student, and this week he told me that a poop has a narrative arc. He's like, when you're sitting on the toilet and like squeezing, like that's the rising action. And he's like, and I was like, yeah, no, I think I got it from here.
That's incredible.
I can do the narrative arc, man. All right.
Yo.
He's a real student of the classics.
I love that. I love that's a real, you know, that's like the perfect encapsulation of what I think every male white podcaster wants their children to be, which is someone who is smart about stuff, but is also going to talk about poop a lot.
Yeah. You
No, he's ready to be. He's just training to be a future Frotcast and
Hell yeah.
Yourself a Man podcast guest.
That's good his, though. I mean, look,
ceiling.
The future is that all of our children will just do podcasts because there will be no there will be no jobs.
Oh man.
What I kind of like that we just got in early on, like the last export of the dying empire, which is make podcast. You know, it's good. It's good for us. Anyways, Matt Ufford, what's your favorite advertisement?
I was going to say Schmidt's Gay, and then I realized that's not a real advertisement.
It's not
real. I knew that Vince would appreciate that answer. My real answer is probably sometime around the time I had kids, you know, 10 plus years ago, 11 years ago, I started just crying at any ad that had piano in it. Like,
what?
it happened during a lot of iPhone ads. And, you know, any
like ad sad me, piano? Like,
yeah, it's like just the tinkly piano, and then like there'd be like photos of children growing up, and so like part of its content, but mostly it's the piano that gets the waterworks running.
Yeah, and they do like, the tinkly piano, and they're like, "Your kids, you love them, and so do we. Won't you feed them to us, please?"
Got Epstein on the brain.
Obliquely related to that is like the narrative arc of like the dog getting old and dying over like puppy to dog death over the course of a dog food ad.
That's not allowed.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down. That's not okay.
Yeah.
That is emotional manipulation. Like I will take some happy tears at like thinking about my kids growing up.
Sure.
But I will not accept the thought of a dog being a puppy and then dying.
God, I don't think I remember a dog food ad where it's just like your dog's going to die soon. Might as well feed it something fun. I don't remember that.
We're trying to get your dog to live the longest, happiest life. And God. There was like a Super Bowl dog food ad that did that a year or two ago.
Damn.
Yeah.
In between the Puppy Bowl and the Bud Bowl, they're like, you know, here's some dogs aging.
what about
and
that?
Already getting a puppy is like, I would like to be the saddest I've ever been in 12 years.
Right.
Like, that's just what you sign. Like, I haven't felt really sad in a long time. I'm just going to like mark the calendar like 11 to 14 years from now.
It is
I'm
kind of
be a fucking mess.
I love that. I love that. It's you pretty much get if you get a puppy, you're just like, I'm kind of counting on just a devastating amount of depression about 12 years from now.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I thought when I befriended Matt, you know, but
I'm still alive, baby.
I know. It's great.
I'm going strong.
Clock's ticking.
Clock is ticking. You know what else is ticking? The fucking blood pressure on this motherfucker. My blood pressure is high, guys. I'm finna die. How high is your blood pressure, Matt Ufford?
I've got good blood pressure, but I've got high cholesterol.
Okay. Vince Mancini, how high is your blood pressure?
It's medium high. I have high
Tell me
blood
the numbers.
Pressure and medium. Oh, it's like I have to take medication for it, but it's usually like, you know, 128 over 80 now.
You
but
guys,
that's,
on,
it's
you guys on the
down.
Statins?
That's really
on the statins.
That's really good. 128 over 80 something?
Well, now I also jog every day.
Okay, what is it
anymore.
Without it?
I don't know.
What was it? I just want to feel better about my, like, I got mine down to like 135 over 88. And I feel pretty good about that.
That's good. Yeah, you're fine.
You're going to stay alive a little bit longer with that.
It'll probably be all right.
I'm finna die, dude. And sometimes at night, I'm just like, am I going to stroke out? But then I just stroke off. You know what I mean, guys? You guys know
it's
what I mean?
It's probably because you're tall. Your blood pressure has to be high for it to reach
That's what
your,
I'm worried about.
Extremities.
I'm like, wait, am I going to die the way like all tall guys die? You know, because it's like...
What, where you get an infection on your foot and they go septic?
No, what? What are you talking about?
I'm thinking of Robert Wadlow.
I'm talking about blood pressure stuff.
Oh, okay.
Because every time there's like a giant man who exists, they always die really young. And everyone goes like, well, yeah, he's so tall. I'm like, well, that's not fair.
Well, no, I remember reading the Guinness Book of World Records, and I was like, this Robert Wadlow, man, that guy's he's so tall. I wish he was alive so we could like look at him. What happened to him? He died at 22. He had like an infection in his foot. That's a terrible story.
Is it because it was so far down that he's like, what foot? And then died?
Yeah, probably.
That's probably it. That's probably what happened.
He kept stubbing it on stuff because he was, you know.
Did he really date the world's smallest woman? Because that was like the thing. Like, you go to any Ripley's, believe it or not, or like a wax museum, they'll be like, here's the wax of the world's tallest man and the world's smallest girl. And then it'll be like, they dated. And I'm like, that's impossible.
No, I think you shipped them in Tumblr parlance.
This is like fanfic.
Man, what if
it's good fanfic, man? Fanfic is reshaping the entire literature industry.
I love that
publishing industry.
Yeah, man. All you need is some IP and some horny women, and you got yourself a studio.
You got IP, and then you got a V. Now you got IP and the V.
Yeah. Well, anyways, this is not a podcast about peeing and Vs. No, this is a podcast about selling ads and Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the motherfucking theme song. Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chose a madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eyes. Mad man. Mad man. Mad. All right, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, once again, this is from season 4 of Mad Men, episode 3, The Good News. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
It's late December 1964, and Joan is trying to start a family with Greg, but her work schedule and his impending army commitments make things difficult. Dawn takes a trip to California to see Anna and meets her niece, who delivers some unsettling news. Upon returning to New York, he finds Lane in the office, who has been experiencing family difficulties of his own.
That's too many. It's just, you know, I was like looking for a sentence, not all the storylines. That's my job. Vince? Okay.
I copied and pasted. I was lazy.
Okay, fair enough. But Vince.
Yep.
What was happening at the time that this episode is set in?
Yeah. I think what you're trying to say is we cannot evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. We like to put a little of that context back in with a little segment that we call the news machine.
Oh.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Yeah, this Fuck is. Yeah. We're hearkening all the way back to August 8th, 1964, since this episode aired August 8th, 2010. There is some crazy stuff going on. Congress is giving solid backing to Vietnam policy. The whole Gulf of Tonkin just kicked off thanks Jim Morrison's dad.
What?
Yeah, he did the Gulf of Tonkin. You got to look that one up.
Jim Morrison's dad did the Gulf
of Tonkin? Jim Morrison's dad was the admiral in charge of the whole section.
The Lizard King?
Yeah.
The Lizard King's dad?
The Lizard King's dad. The Lizard King Sr.
Wait, but isn't that why?
So Jim Morrison is really more of a lizard prince.
Yeah.
Yeah, first of all, he's a lizard prince. Second of all, is he a lizard CIA op?
He was the king papa, they call it. Like, you know how they say the queen mum when she's like the older one? I think there's like the king dad. I don't know.
There's got to be a conspiracy theory about now that the Jim Morrison and the Doors were controlled opposition or something, right? Like, there's definitely a left wing.
I laid that whole thing out.
Did you?
Yeah, I think so.
Did I forget?
Yeah,
it's called blood pressure's too high, dude.
Times in the Valley or something like that. I can't remember what the book's called. Anyway, I'm not going to read that whole story. I think you know that that context. I got too many weird stories to read.
Tell me the weird stories. That's what I come here for.
For me to give you like that kind of historical context, because I'd rather give you the context of this article headlined, "A High-Level Excuse for Slugging Your Wife."
Oh, the 60s.
This is from the San Francisco Chronicle again. A man who slugs his wife may be nothing like the traditional bully evoked by the phrase wife beater.
I love that. Yeah. You know, wow. There are some people who slug their wives because the wives were asking for it.
Wow.
This is incredible.
A study of a dozen stormy suburban homes indicated yesterday that the husband may actually be rather passive and shy. A man who tends to seek solace in drink while his wife runs the family with a heavy hand.
What?
Yo, is this real?
Quote, the essential ingredient leading to the essential ingredient leading to physical abuse seems to be the need both husband and wife feel for a periodic reversal of roles, unquote, a research team reported in the current issue of Archives of General Psychiatry, published by the American Medical Association.
What?
The wife and mother is tired of doing 100% of the work of raising the family and running the house and would like to sit down and have a glass of wine?
Right. He's like, yeah. What do you want, reverse roles?
Like to reverse those roles.
If you want to reverse roles, that means I get to hit you.
Look, I've been sitting on this couch since 5 p.m. I drank hard at work today, and I just want to sit down and have six more drinks.
You want me to love my child like a woman? What the fuck?
The wife feels a need to be punished, the report said.
And the
husband was said to require an occasional chance to reestablish his masculine identity.
Bro, this is...
What?
I mean, look.
Maybe they're going to bring it back around. Just sit tight.
Yeah, sure. Okay, let's see where this goes.
This condition can go on for years to the mutual satisfaction of husband and wife, the researchers found.
Wait. Mutual. Everyone's into this?
Do we pull the women? Are we sure about
this is
that
the
one?
Weirdest article I've ever read. But the delicate balance becomes upset when a third party, generally an oldest son who reaches the age of adolescence, starts interfering.
With the beatings.
Yeah. At this stage, the wife may turn to the law for help. Doctors John E. Snell, Richard J. Rosenwald, and Ames Roby of Framingham, Massachusetts, reported that in the cases they had studied, the wives had been married an average of 13 years before seeking outside aid. In no case was the husband's violence of recent onset, the doctors reported. Each wife admitted readily that fighting had existed throughout her marriage. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, the study said the marriages had shown considerable stability. Sorry.
Except for the beatings.
Yeah.
Save for the beatings, it was a very stable marriage. I love that they're like, we asked three male doctors who definitely don't beat their wives they thought.
You got to hear this next part.
Oh, God.
A solution, it was suggested, was to teach the wives how to stop goading their husbands into hitting them. This is the last line of the article. Frequently, the psychiatric treatment of the wives was found to be an efficient method of restoring equilibrium, the doctor said.
Yeah.
We did it. We tried everything. Electroshock, removing part of her brain.
Yeah, exactly.
That really fixed her.
I stabbed her in the forehead with an ice pick to see if that would help.
We found that getting rid of a little bit of that full frontal lobe will help calm the women down and keep them from asking, please punch me. I'm woman. I deserve it. It's crazy because, like, you know, watching this show is you're kind of like going back in time a little bit to like, oh yeah, this is when, you know, when men were men, right? You know, they're just like, you know, this is back when women had to just sit there and take it. And you forget that the entire society is like this, even the doctors doing science.
Yes.
They're just like, we got to study hysteria in women because they keep every 13 years, you know, like clockwork, they start asking the police for help when we hit them.
I chose this next one because it really feels like
Hold on,
subplot.
Vince, can I just pause you before we move on? I just want to state, like, as a person, like, I would like to write a full rebuttal to everything that happened there. I don't have time to do it right now, but yes. Like,
just know we do not endorse that article.
The Chronicle coming out like a 2025 like right wing podcast something that I was really unready for today. Where did you like? Is your are you LexisNexis? What's your
Wayback Machine, baby?
Where are you fronting this?
That's newspapers.com. That's the front page of the Chronicle, August 8th.
Front page.
Page.
A1.
Front page, not the lifestyle section.
I love this. That is crazy.
Wow.
I love this.
Yeah, page one.
Wow.
Oh, cool. Well,
the headline was The Suicide Outbreak, Why They Jump, but I skipped that one.
Okay.
Well, we found that many of them are women in marriages for 13 years who tried calling the police.
Well,
they were given electroshock.
Unrelated. Unrelated. Those are unrelated stories.
Mm-hmm. I got a more fun one. This one really feels like a Mad Men subplot. Right. Three charged in Peninsula joyride.
Sick.
Three Bay Area businessmen were charged with joyriding yesterday after they spent the night cruising the peninsula in a San Mateo County fire truck.
Sick.
They are Thomas J. Ginchy, 40, of Oakland, an advertising man, Charles Ogle, 41, of Pine Street, San Francisco, a real estate developer, and Donald Mason, 31, a factory representative from Oakland. Around 7:30 a.m. yesterday, Half Moon Bay Police Chief Donald Pierman spotted a fire truck, red lights blinking, driving along Main Street. "I became suspicious because I knew there was no fire," Chief Pierman said.
I love that.
The truck parked at the Half Moon Bay Tavern, and three men alighted and went inside. The chief followed. Ogle, who was driving the truck, told Pierman they landed Ogle's airplane at the Half Moon Bay Airport at midnight Thursday and had trouble with the plane's battery when he tried to start the motor again. Since they needed a ride to town and no other transportation was available, they borrowed the airport fire truck, Ogle told the chief, and drove it to a bar.
Is there a problem, officer?
Yeah.
I didn't know you couldn't do that.
Somebody just left the keys in the fire truck.
I kind of thought we explained ourselves. I don't see why you want to handcuff us.
I'm white. He's also white. I don't see the issue.
My friend here is also white, so what's the problem?
You understand that we pay taxes, and this is our fire truck. And we are doing a public service. We have a fire to put out, and that fire is my burning need to get drunk right now. So I don't see why. You know what? Just call it a joyride, and let's call it a day.
They were charged with joyriding, and each was released on $100 bail.
There you go.
So I love that. That is, there's a crime that's just called joyriding, which is just like, it's
also. So having fun's against the law now?
Yeah. It's like, dude, it's like, you know, there are some people who are white who steal things, and we need to, like, you know, have a lesser sentence. Like, yeah, they're just having a good time, you know?
I got drunk at work for 37 hours this week. You don't think I deserve a little recreation?
Wow, that is, I mean, if you're gonna steal, you know, a vehicle to joyride in. As soon as I heard fire truck, I was like, that's sick. I like this.
Yeah.
This
is good. It's got two steering wheels and you're allowed to, there's also handles, like, on the side.
Credit to them. They found the lights.
I know.
I don't think I'd necessarily know where, I haven't been in a fire truck. So yeah. I guess it would be pretty obvious.
I feel like the factory worker is the guy who knows fire trucks.
Also, let's talk about the way that the stratification of society, like the fact that a factory worker was hanging out with a real estate agent,
I know,
and an ad man.
Yeah.
Like, we got blue collar, white collar mixing together in the 60s in the way that black and white people did not.
Legally. I know. It is crazy. Yeah. We had some cross class solidarity at one point. And
as long as you weren't a woman.
As long as you weren't a woman or of a different skin color, you were pretty much cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, we got what every good 60s newspaper has, is a random story about a pretty woman on page three.
Oh, yeah.
I hope they're mean to her.
Paging
this is a one material.
Yeah, right.
Pretty lady spotted.
Yes.
Paging a vanished beauty, Doreen Swan, AWOL in U.S. Salt Lake City. An international beauty queen rescued from the rigors of the Miss Universe contest by her bearded boyfriend was at large yesterday in the United States while her concerned family tried to get in touch with her.
At large? What's happening?
Also, take note of the adjective bearded. During the time, that was like a Class C felony to have.
That's right.
Facial hair that was larger than a mustache.
They couldn't say communist, so they said bearded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doreen Swan, the 19-year-old Scottish lass who originally came to the United States for the Miami Beach pageant, was last heard from Monday when she telephoned Aberdeen, Scotland, her hometown, from Salt Lake City. Doreen quit the Miss Universe pageant on July 13th before the judging began. She said it was, quote, like a prison that nearly gave me a nervous breakdown, unquote. Her bushy-bearded Scottish boyfriend, J. Watt Nickel, appeared dramatically on the scene in New York to whisk his 37-22-36 sweetheart away from the cause.
Give me the measurements.
They dropped the measurements. Finally. We got some data. This is data visualization.
This Scottish lass has milky white tits.
I think I see her. No, that's not her. She only has a 34-inch bust.
All right, somebody get the tape measure. I think it's her.
Line them up against the wall and measure them all.
Yeah, now make them talk. If they talk weird, then we know they're Scottish.
Scotland hastily entered another girl, blonde Wendy Berry of Glasgow, in the universe contest.
Let me get those measurements.
Police in Salt Lake City notified Thursday by the British consulate that Miss Swan's family had a message for her, broadcast an alert to be on the lookout for a, quote, very pretty girl.
That's they're rare enough in Scotland. Here in America,
yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah,
that's not helpful.
She's the one pretty girl we got. All right,
we on the lookout for a girl. She's got all of her teeth.
We had to send our second prettiest girl. She looks like a fucking pig. She looks like she was born from a bug. We sent a swamp thing to Utah.
We washed the paint off her face. Smells like an Afroik, she does.
Our second prettiest girl looks like a dog, and she barks like one, too. But she's blonde.
Police Captain Dewey Phyllis said there was no evidence of any violation of the law.
There's no evidence of any pretty girls here.
Yeah, I was like, I haven't seen a pretty girl yet.
We did the full examination.
Yeah, we measured their tits. We measured the bottom.
We found one tet's larger than the other, but there's been no crimes as far as we can tell.
Is it a crime? It's a perfect tet. It's hard to keep that accent going. Well, wow. So, you know, I don't hope they found her. I hope she got to live her life, you know. Yeah. The way she wanted to.
So what of Miss Swan? Is she just in the wind with her bearded boyfriend?
She's in the wind. They're off. They're off partying.
At some point, we got to do like updates. Like you want to like find out.
Let's
what
hear
happened.
More about this blonde. I never got her.
I know what happened to her.
I did have one more. Do you want me to go with the next story? Or you want to move on?
Yeah, go ahead. If you got one more.
The headline is actors beaten by gang.
Okay. I love this. Yeah.
Yeah. A gang of 30 young men beat up four amateur actors.
30 men?
Who? You talk about the male loneliness epidemic. Who has 30 friends? That's incredible. Crazy.
That is literally
like the Warriors, dude.
Yeah, that's a gang of fools. Uh-huh. That's crazy.
Please continue.
Rehearsing at the Manhattan Playhouse in East Palo Alto at about 9 p.m. Thursday, it was reported yesterday. None of the four was seriously hurt. Many of the assailants were wearing green and black jackets with Assyrians, the name of a local teenage club, stitched on the backs.
Assyrians?
God, a teenage club? Oh, man.
Wait,
the gang burst in through a side door, beat up the victims, and damaged about $20 worth of stage equipment, Deputy Sheriff Fred Whitley said. They escaped through the front door of the building.
Why? I mean, look, I don't like theater kids any more than the next guy, but is there a reason why they were like, we got to beat up these amateur actors?
I think they were just rampaging around and they were like, there's a building that might have people in it.
Just doing weird acting stuff with my fellow drama nerds when the Sharks bust in stage right.
I like to imagine they were just walking through town like the Bushwhackers.
Just snapping. That is interesting. Or it's like, because part of me was going, I wonder if this is like some sort of hate crime. You know, it's like a gang of kids who are just like, oh, you know, these guys are gay. But it's like,
they were just partying. They were just out to cause some mischief.
Right. But yeah, I'm like, but there's 30 guys who are like, let's wear matching tops and do crimes. Like, to me, I'm like, you guys were inspired by fucking West Side Story. How are you going to do a hate crime?
Yeah. Maybe that's why they didn't like the play. They're like,
yeah,
Shakespeare. Yeah. Let's see some what is it, Sondheim that does the West Side
yeah.
Story?
Yeah. Leonard Bernstein, right? West Side Story is Bernstein.
I think Sondheim.
What?
No, is it Bernstein? Damn it.
I think it's Bernstein. I'm looking it up.
I don't have West a window Side. Open because I have all of my attention on you guys.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. West Side Story is Leonard Bernstein. Yeah.
Damn it.
Oh, shit. Music by Bernstein, lyrics by Sondheim.
There we go.
We're both right.
That's a power couple right there.
That is a power couple. I did see that movie, by the way. Did you guys know Leonard Bernstein is gay?
A little bit. What? Yeah.
That's crazy, yeah. Dude. Next year you're going to tell me.
He's kind of just in for everything, I think.
Next year you're going to tell me he was a Jew.
He liked all flavors.
Oh, doll flavors. Well, that's the news.
He likes guy flavors. He likes doll flavors. It takes all kinds.
Oh, guys and dolls flavors. All right. Well, that's the news. That's what's happening. Now we are fully contextualized to understand this episode. And before we get started, this song, which came out in 65, this is about Anna Draper being the coolest girl in the world. And I mean that in the most derogatory sense of what a cool girl is. And here's a little clip for you.
I wish they all could be like Anna Draper. Yeah. My West Coast wife is super chill and she has no needs at all. She just sits and smiles and is happy for me. She don't exist between visits and calls. I screwed every girl I've ever met, but Anna's never judgmental. I killed her husband in Korea and stole his identity, yet she don't seem to give a fuck at all. I wish
well. Yeah, there it is, guys.
It's not going to come through in the audio format, but I very nearly avoided a spit take
when you hit
I killed her husband in Korea. was not ready for that.
Yes. You can listen to that full song at the end of the episode. But
by the way, are we sure there's not a real Matt Ufford who died in the first Iraq invasion?
That's right.
Someone who's just like,
yeah you could.
I don't know. Like, who would want my station in life? You'd have to be a real. I guess you'd have to be a real dick.
You'd have to be a real dick to want to be an Ufford.
Also, there's like, where you're gonna find a handsomer guy than me, really?
Yeah, please.
I guess that would be the case of like a dick stealing the Don Draper role.
That's right.
Anyway. Yeah,
that's right.
That's exactly what he would say.
So this episode there's a lot going on in this episode, but let's get some general thoughts. Vince, tell me, what did you think?
I'll be honest, I did not remember this episode, and then I watched it, and I was like, man, is this the greatest Mad Men episode of them all? Like, this is
pretty
fantastic episode from top to bottom. Might be my favorite, you know, Dawn and Lane. Just Dawn and Lane's last weekend was really killing
that
it
was
for
fun.
Me.
Yeah.
Mostly it shows how it's possible to enjoy people being nice to Dawn, even as Dawn's constantly just being the drunkest shitbag in town. And, you know, I love Anna. I feel like the show is designed for me to love Anna, and it totally worked. I don't especially love her having to be the sin eater for the show, but I like her as a person. I like having her around. It's nice.
Yeah.
Great episode.
Yeah. Matt Ufford, general thoughts. What'd you think?
Well, I'm not doing a full rewatch of the show. I just parachuted in
for season four,
episode three. And my favorite episode ever is the Jet Set. So, like, Don Draper in California is just like, that guy's in a convertible. He's got those old school aviators on.
Yes.
It's just like, God Built damn it, he's fucking cool.
Yeah.
But also, it's a nice reminder of like what an actor John Hamm is, because like, He really just like, it's a slow episode. Not a lot happens. And it was like a nice reminder of like what that show could do with just letting actors have emotions on their face.
Yeah.
And then the other sometimes thing, he's sad about his fake wife getting cancer, and other times he's trying to fuck a teenager. And yeah, you're like, you know, wow. Like,
it's the full range of Don Draper emotions right there.
Yeah, this is true. This episode, there really is the full range, because not only do you see him, you know, in the like, you know, several modes that he has as Don Draper, but you also see him as Dick Whitman in this, and mm-hmm. those emotions are even more raw.
He makes it very clear. He's like an entirely different person. He's truly himself when he's hanging out with Anna, and for whatever, she's delightful. The show generally just has like too many New Yorkers and needs more Californians. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just like, hey, it's cool, man. I love you for who you are. Yeah. You know, there's just, yes. Like, I'm a sexy teenager and I'm not going to sleep with you.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, that the show needs a little bit of that from time to time.
I agree.
And then Lane, I don't think we're doing spoilers here, but like rewatching it, like knowing the full arc of his character, it's kind of a really eye-opening thing. And I'd forgotten about how the steak scene where he says, I got a Texas belt buckle or whatever it was. Yeah. Like, I got a good laugh out loud moment. Like, it's cool to see him, you know, Don in his very Don Draper way, like incorporate him into Sterling Cooper Draper Price.
Yeah. Lane gave me like three good belly laughs this episode, I think.
Yeah. He's really funny in this episode, and he's also, it's a really sad episode for him as well, because you can just...
Oh yeah, we have a very like a grim men's night out. Like, yeah, it's the divorced dads having a night on the town.
And
yeah.
Finn is there.
Yes, Finn is there from The Sopranos doing stand-up.
There's like so many Sopranos callbacks in this episode.
Yeah, no, that's true. There is. And it's interesting. This episode kind of is broken up into two parts. For the most part, I think it's like one is Don as Dick. You know, it's Dick in L.A. and then it's Don in New York having a night with the boys, you know, or the boy, Lane, in New York. And both stand on their own as like, you know, fabulous sequences. Of course, the Lane and Dawn stuff is painted so much by everything revealed earlier between, you know, Dick and Anna that you can really, it's like, you see how depressed they both are. And they're both like, they're at a very low point. And so they bond the way men do, which is like getting drunk at work and then doing racist accents in a Godzilla movie. And there's just something about that where you're just like, you know, men never really change. they only become better at not doing public bigotry. That's pretty much it.
And don't forget the sex workers.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, the sex workers right after.
No night is complete.
No night is complete without paying for sex because you're sad. So then there's also the Joan storyline, which is good as well. It mixes in with the Lane storyline in some aspects, and in some aspects it's just about her continuing saga with her husband, who is going to go to war or going to be in the army at some point, and she wants to have kids.
That's the fast forward part of the episode for me is old Greg.
I mean, look, I don't mind it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Greg's a tough watch. Greg's a real tough watch because Joan is so clearly like so strong, so smart, so sexy. And like, it's great. Like, again, I'm parachuting back into the show for one episode.
Right.
And like, it was 15 years ago that I was last watching this show or thereabouts. And be like, oh, hell yeah, Christina Hendricks. Yeah. Welcome back into my life anytime.
Yeah, anytime.
And so it's a delight to see her act, but her palpable fear at like accepting her doctor husband's medical aid was very much like, just take me to the hospital.
Well, I need a good doctor. Knows that her husband doesn't have good enough skills to be a surgeon, and his mentor told him that his hands have shit for brains or whatever he said.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'll stitch you right up. And she's like, hold
she's
on
like,
there.
No. But yeah, let's start with the Dick storyline, you know, with him in L.A., seeing Anna Draper. He sees Anna, you know, he's driving, he sees her, and her leg is broken. And, you know, it's kind of played off for, like, you know, I guess we've only ever seen her kind of hobbling because she had polo earlier, so it's, it doesn't feel.
Did you say polo?
Polo or polio?
Did I say polo?
Yeah, there were no horses. You said polo.
My
for sure.
Blood pressure's too high, you guys. I'm just. She had polio earlier, so you don't really notice. The broken leg is just something that has happened. He says,
I did think it's strange that she was on a horse for the entire episode, but yeah. When it was explained to me that she had polio. Well, of course, she's going to ride a horse if she had polio as a child.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Your legs don't work. The horse's legs work fine.
I'm doing my best. I'm doing what can I do but my best. She has polio, or she had it. And he's like, hey, get off my porch. Oh, right. It's his house. And everyone's calling him Dick here, which is also something you notice because it's just something that doesn't happen any other time, obviously. Here, he is his actual name. He is Dick Whitman.
Yeah, and we
here.
Find out that her, like, everybody knows that he's Dick there, not just
right.
Not just Anna.
Not just Anna, but Anna's sister knows, Anna's niece knows. It's like, and it's sweet. It's like, this is, Anna's place is like a safe haven for him. It's like, it's probably the one place in the world where he is himself. I sure hope nothing bad happens to and it.
It's also a nice portrayal of California, you know, in the 60s, where it was like, yeah, everybody was nice, they were accepting, mm-hmm. they're smoking grass, they're doing free love, but they're also trying to pimp out their children for some reason.
Yeah, well, that was part of it. You know, this is interesting in terms of, like, you guys, I think, have both characterized this as, this is just showing California chill. Mm. And I think that's, like, okay, like, that's part of it for sure, but also, I feel like this whole episode is about how God doesn't want Dawn to be happy, how he gives him, like, a cool girl, someone who is so cool that you could accidentally kill her husband in Korea and steal his identity, and she'd still be like, I just want you to be happy. Like, yeah. Like, he has the perfect woman, which is, number one, someone he does not have to fuck. He could fuck, but does not have to fuck, and expects nothing of him, and never intrudes on his life, allows him essentially to, you know, live his life without any issues. He pays for everything based on his own, I think, guilt about, you know, stealing her husband's identity, who he killed. But she is literally spends this whole episode just being like, man, I just want you to be happy. And that, to me, is like, it's an interesting, I mean, you think you called him called her a sin eater, which I think is an interesting role for her to play. I'm not sure how realistic the character is.
Well, I will say the realistic part of this is that it clearly depicts California's, like, chill lifestyle and easygoing way as being underpinned by the military-industrial complex.
Sure,
and,
sure.
Like, you know, you get Jim Morrison in the form of, like, Anna and her daughter, and everybody's chill and cool and doing freaky-deaky sex, but in the background, she's also seeing UFOs.
Your father, UFOs.
They live in an environment where they're, like, constantly testing experimental planes that they can use to bomb foreign people.
Yeah. Yeah. But Anna's, like, character does seem, like, very much to be, like, the ultimate male fantasy type of girl. Like,
it's a very Tarantino character.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not to, you know, I'm not denigrating the entire show.
I mean, we didn't see her feet at all. I don't think she was.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That was the one thing that where they, one time they showed restraint. Was she?
I mean, like, would Quentin Tarantino put a woman's foot in a cast? Let me ask you that.
God. Only if it was from getting fucked.
Dude, the fact that he literally did that, just every part of him is disgusting. There's just so many lines that Anna has that I think are just every dude's, like, fantasy of a cool girl. Like, this is a few of them.
I'm so damn proud of you.
She says that apropos of nothing. In the middle of him, like, painting, and she's, like, talking about UFOs, and then she goes, I'm so damn proud of you. It's like, yeah, okay.
I know everything about you. Mm. And I still love you.
I thought I could stay, but I can't.
Oh, I don't care. I want you to. I want you to do everything you want to do.
Like, I mean, there's, like, a level of ridiculousness with this character. Yeah. Which is, I mean,
again, it, very Tarantino, where he wrote the whole True Romance, where he's like, "Oh, I found this girl who just wants to like smoke weed and watch samurai movies with me."
Right, and she's cool. She doesn't care that
she's
if
she's hot. She's cool.
She just wants to hang out. And also, it, when you are not in her vicinity, she literally doesn't exist. Yeah. She's like Schrodinger's cool girl. She's
she only exists because of me. Yes. She's here to give me unlimited emotional support yes. with, and wants nothing in return.
Yeah. Whenever I leave, she is frozen in a block of ice until I return.
She's, and she's attractive, but not hot enough for me to want it.
Yeah, exactly. But I might God. Fuck oh, her man. Niece.
So I was... I will give you credit here, Matt. Like, I hadn't thought of her character critically at all, but yeah, there's some, it doesn't really hold up under a magnifying glass so well.
No.
And the only, I think, the saving grace of it almost is the fact that you find out that she is dying and that she is most likely going to die, you know, between now and the next time he tries to see her. He's making plans, you know, to see her in the spring with the bring the kids out and stuff, and she's
I'll bring the kids out. It'll be great.
And she's like, do it or don't. I don't care. I could die, and if you forgot about me, I'd be okay. You are under no obligation to love me or connect with me. I exist for your pleasure and your pleasure only. But her dying is almost like it's almost a good thing. I mean, it's obviously it's very sad, you know, if you without looking at it in a critical way, it is just her. The only person who knows him, truly knows everything about him, is dying. And that's like awful.
I want to do whatever's most convenient for you, Don Draper, including possibly dying before I tell anyone your secrets.
And that's like the craziest.
Don, I want you to do something for me. Yeah. When this house is empty, use it as a place to take your girlfriends.
In my will, I bequeath you my niece to fuck at your leisure.
She's very young, but it's not illegal.
It's the 60s. It's fine. You can hit her and it's probably not a problem.
Another great thing about the 60s is you could have a secret, like an absolutely open secret identity across the country. Like,
yeah,
it's not just a secret. Like Anna's totally tight ass sister like knows his secrets, as does her family. So
it's no
like,
social media.
Nobody feels the need to pick up the phone and like start like looking for ad agencies in New York City to let them know, like, hey, this guy's doing some crime.
He's not who he says he is. Yeah, no.
I think this is actually illegal.
I mean, it's a very East Coast type of I could be looking at this completely wrong, but it feels like a very East Coast view of the West Coast, which is just like, California, the land where nothing you did back in the East Coast matters and where they cannot even communicate with anyone from the East Coast. And you can go there and start over again and, you know, build your new life. And there's, you know, it's almost like you went through a fucking time portal or whatever.
No, it's like you're a ship captain and you go and have your like secret wife in Tahiti. And
right.
And you just like come back to England and then, you know, do whatever.
We got a little flavor of a recurring storyline in Mad Men, which is Harry just being like, I just want to go to Los Angeles, Los Angeles, Los Angeles. Like, Harry, shut up about Los Angeles already.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like, Harry's character only gets more and more disgusting.
I get verklempt just thinking about the Brown Derby.
Yeah, because, well, number one, he starts just doing Yiddish at people, even, you know, despite not being Jewish. He's just like, oh, I learned a bunch of Yiddish from Ricky Ricardo and fucking Lucille Ball. And also he gets more gross as the series goes on, but also as more and more Epstein files get released, you just get more and more like, oh, this kind of guy, he was on the island, you know, type.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so was Dawn. Like the scene where Dawn and Steph, I think her name is. This is Anna's niece.
Yeah.
Stephanie.
With her weird mouth.
All right. I don't know if her mouth is that weird. Her mouth is fine.
Look at your mouth.
All right. I mean, when you do that, that is a good impression of her mouth. But
I talk like this.
I mean, my mouth is like, you guys can't see what I'm doing, but
I can see. And
crushing the audio, man.
I'll be real with all the listeners out there. He's doing a pretty good job. If you saw it, you'd be like, yeah, that's true. But like, he's like making the moves, you know, making some moves on her, and says this line.
You're so beautiful and young.
Just saying that out loud to somebody.
Who doesn't that work on?
Yeah, no, that's not a good. I feel like he's like making a pass at her out of like Draperian like requirements of himself. He's like, well, his heart's not on it. Like he's driven he's like, a girl home hammered, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Oh, no, I'll like, drive you drunk home.
You put
home
a college drunk girl in my car that I'm supposed to drive home alone.
His heart wasn't in it.
Like, it definitely seemed like he was supposed to do that. Like Anna's like, oh no, just I can't dance. Obviously you have to dance with my niece and drive her home.
Yeah, it really did feel a little bit like Anna was pimping out her mm-hmm. niece, which fine.
According to Mad Men canon, this is your
Tarantino girl, right? Like right. She's just like, I'm here to just like,
yeah,
it's also every attractive canon. Young woman know I'm gonna funnel right to you, Don.
I'm here to procure you know, problematic sex for you.
It's also Mad Men canon that like relatives just feed their young sex forward daughters to you when you go over there, because it's exactly what happened at the hotel in the last California episode.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
it was the 1960s. It was. I'm sure there's another Chronicle article about that too.
Yeah, but the scene between Dawn and Steph and Anna at the bar is something I want to talk about real quick, just because it was like one of the more like of a really good episode, one of the most more annoying conversations where the way they write like mid 60s Berkeley student girl is them having a conversation about how advertising sucks, which is like, I get that this was like a big, you know, thing of the time. I'm not going to judge it, you know, now obviously, but the there's nothing more annoying to me than the argument that Dawn makes to her about like who runs the world. And here's that
scene. I'm not political. I just don't understand who's in charge.
You're in charge. Trust me, I work in advertising.
You're kidding me. It's pollution.
So stop buying things.
Don't think that's not possible.
So
That feels very Aaron Sorkin writing right there, where it's like, does. All right, well, we got to have the older male centrist explain to the young idealistic liberal why she's mistaken.
Right. And I the problem I have with it is the authority that Don Draper carries with his like biting analysis when it comes to society. You're supposed to like take, you know, seriously, because he's the guy, and you know, if there's one thing he knows, it's advertising. But this argument of like, you know, you youth, you're the ones who really run things, because trust me, because we're always trying to sell stuff to you. First of all, it's like, yeah, you're just trying to fuck them. That's why you think that you think you're like, oh, young people run the world, because I would literally shoot myself in the dick to fuck one. And like, it's very horny.
I think the other quality that this has, which is like my least favorite Mad Men quality, is when they do like the jazz scat dialogue, where like it sounds like good dialogue if you don't pay attention to what they're saying and just like let them go to the next line. But like, I'm just trying to find out who's in charge. What the fuck does that even mean?
When I was 19, I didn't care who was in charge. I was trying to get laid. Like,
right. Yeah. And also, it's like, who's in charge? I'd be like, I don't know, like the president, the police and stuff.
And what does she do when she finds out who's in charge? Does she like write a letter to them about like what the state of the world?
It's a clunky opening to this conversation about advertising that ends with a stupid point where he's just like, stop buying things. And she pauses and goes, don't think that's not possible. If you're really having this argument, that's a stupid place to land where, oh, you think it's impossible. Like, what do you think? You think capitalism owns buying stuff, like,
or that people wouldn't buy stuff if it weren't advertised?
Or products wouldn't get bought if you didn't advertise them a certain way. It's just like this. I don't know. There's a lifting up of this advertiser as like the holy middleman. I'm like, they don't do shit. What are we talking about? Why are we pretending?
I think this is. I didn't mind this. exchange as much as I minded the entire exchange that was like based on us supposedly knowing the lyrics to Old Cape Cod by Patti Page. Yeah. Like they have a whole conversation about this old ass song and like what it's about. I'm like, were we supposed to know this song or are we supposed to be like so impressed by your historical knowledge that we go back and find out what the song is? I think it's probably more the second one.
Yeah.
But either way, it's sort of like, all right, just get to the part where he hits on her.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Can you get
which to is the really part, what yeah. that scene, I think the purpose of it was like the prelude to set up like he's gonna make a move on her because he's both condescending to her and also like, you know, playing like we have witty repartee, but he's also condescending to her. So it's like, all right, of course he's gonna he's gonna hit on her later.
Yes, that's really what the scene is about. And also the scene is about having Anna and Don talk about how you know, well, once Betty found out that you know who I was, you know,
she didn't even want to look at me anymore.
She didn't want to look at me anymore. And Anna's role is to go, "Damn, that sucks, bro. Bitches are the worst."
Anyway, have you met my niece?
Anyway, so you want to
fuck? She's really horny and wearing a bikini right now. You want to
fuck some young meat? Anyways, he takes her home. He's about to put the moves on her, and then they reveal that not only is Anna dying of cancer, but that she doesn't know that she has it. The doctors won't tell her, and neither will her sister or her niece.
I would love to have, like Vince, you got to find a 1960s article about doctors we're not going to tell a patient what the disease, or like her sister intercepted the doctor. Like, I just don't understand.
No, the doctors apparently said it's no use telling her. She's going to be dead soon anyways. Might as well let her enjoy the last few days. Totally fucking insane. It is crazy. I think in the 60s, it is, because I talked to my mom about this back when I like first watched this show. And I remember being like, what? That's fucking crazy. And my mom said, you know, I think that was actually a lot more common than you'd think, that it was kind of like, you know, doctors just would not be completely honest with someone if they were sick, because it'd be like, you know,
like, listen, she's a woman, she can't be thinking these complex thoughts.
I mean, like women were men's property.
Yes, so like, yes.
Ma'am, I've got your lab results here. Do you have a husband that I can tell them to? That's why I'm surprised that they were like, oh, well, let's tell the sister, because that's just another woman. That's somebody else's property.
Like, well, she doesn't have a husband, but she's got a homely sister who we can tell.
Listen.
Guess it skipped a generation.
But listen, your wife's got a very advanced cancer. I can, you know, I can treat it, but I think it'd be cheaper for you if I just give her this shot right now. You can hold her hand, take her out to the park, have a nice day at the park.
Yeah, find her back favorite here. Place. I'll
give her an injection. You can hold her hand.
Be next to the fireplace. You know,
make her favorite dinner.
It is fucking insane how close to putting down a dog this is.
Like, she'd have to make her own favorite.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah. She'll get to eat it once you're done.
Yeah. But apparently, you know, in the 60s, every doctor was Mangala. Oh, hi, Brent.
Hi. We should probably stop for ads. And if you don't like it, stop buying things.
Buying things. That's right. Stop buying things, everyone, except for these products. So stick around. We'll be right back.
It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help, and you want to be there. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care. Or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour. Plus, access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code LISTEN20 for 20% off your initial Care.com subscription. That's LISTEN20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
And we're back. This is Mad Yourself a Man, the world's most madman podcast. So excited to continue talking about this with Matt Ufford. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great, guys.
Fuck yeah. We're gonna talk more madmen right now. Dawn finds out that she, the only woman who's ever known who he really is finna die. And you're sitting on a couch, awake until the sun comes up. Pretty cool shot, I thought.
That was a cool shot.
Mm-hmm. I was like, that was sick. And then he starts painting like the spot where there was water damage. And Anna's just talking about UFOs and saying, I'm so proud of you. And just so you know, you can fuck whoever you want. You know, you can never talk to me again. I'll still be your best friend. And we see Anna's sister come in and chastise him, I guess, for being in his underwear, and chastise her for smoking weed, which I'm like, bitch, you know she's dying. Are you really going to be a dickhead about the weed? It's very annoying.
Yeah, I thought she's a cancer patient. You got to let her smoke all the weed that she wants. Isn't that the law yet?
Right. What the fuck? And then he chases Anna's sister outside and is just
with
like,
his pants on.
He puts his pants on because he doesn't want to get arrested. And he's like, well, what the hell? Are you going to tell her, or, you know, should I tell her? And she kind of makes a good point, which is just like, who the fuck are you? You come every once in a while. You thaw her body out so she can be like, you're great. Fuck whoever. And then you leave again. You have no say in this. And, you know, I can't really argue with that. He comes back in and says, it turns out I have to go. And Anna is, again, super chill.
Cool with it.
Super cool.
Super chill.
She's the coolest girl in the world.
Well, she thinks he's going to come back for Easter.
I mean, I guess. But even, you know, even if I don't remember where this goes, I know that she dies at some point. But, like, I don't remember if, like, the last time we hear from her is her being like, I would really like to talk to you, Dawn, because I have a feeling that's where this is going. And it just, the whole thing is just incredibly, incredibly sad, because you put Dawn Draper in a position where he is not responsible for you whatsoever, your feelings at all. He is in no way going to reciprocate anything that you give to him, and you're dying. That's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
You know?
John Hamm crushes the scene, man.
Oh, he's so
like
good.
from the interaction with the sister to like to telling Anna that he needs to leave, like it was just a real like, oh, this guy's I don't know shit about acting, but it's just like whatever it takes, this guy's awesome at it.
Yeah.
Seeing all that play out in space.
Job one, be good looking.
Yeah.
Job two, have cool hair that we can make do interesting style and
job
interesting
three
ways.
jaw good mm-hmm. good jaw. I guess jaw that goes in job
rich
one.
Baritone voice.
Yeah, you know what sucks about me having a medically ugly round circle face is that I don't think I'll ever be cast to be a madman, and that's too bad. Yeah. Well, Vince knows what it's like.
Look, maybe like later in life, like John Slattery had all white hair, you know.
I know, but he always had a good jaw.
I think he was like 37 at the time. But
yeah, just
if they remake it and make it Sad Men, I could do that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Dick finishes painting and they hug for a long time. She says goodbye, Dick. Cut to him in the airplane being called Mr. Draper. Damn, she's the last person in the world who knows him, and she finna die.
Yeah, the additional thing of like he was really in the Dick Whitman zone because the flight attendant was like Mr. Draper, and he wasn't responding.
Right, so exactly.
It was a nice little coda there.
Yeah, he forgot for a second that, you know, he had switched over. He's back to his fake fucking identity. So that is that part of the storyline. In order to get to Lane and Dawn having a night on the town, we have to start with what's going on with Joan and Lane. So Joan goes to the OBGYN. He is way too familiar with there's something about that OB that I was like, I just want you dead. I would like you to be dead. Yeah, no, I
didn't like
you're a bad man. You should be dead. And Joan wants to have children and also needs extra time off in order to hang out with Greg before he's shipped off. They don't know when it's going to be, but they know that their schedules are mixed up. She goes into Lane's office and says like, hey, you want some fried chicken? Anyways, I need some extra time off. And Lane is so offended that she was using fried chicken in order to get something from him that he like, he's just kind of a straight-up dick to her, and I have that clip.
And I understand that all men are dizzy and powerless to refuse you, but consider me the incorruptible exception. Fried chicken, indeed.
Fried chicken, indeed.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked.
He's so British.
Don't go and cry about it.
Excuse me?
I said don't go and cry about it.
I said good day, sir.
It bothers me how much of the show consists of people ordering delicious food and not eating it.
I know. Mm. I know. Yeah, like there's a whole scene where he's got the most delicious looking marbled fucking steak. And I'm just like, he's putting it on his pants.
He's like, I'm not hungry.
Yeah. I'm like, guys.
Yeah, eat, why? Why you gotta do that?
Steak. It's so juicy.
You've been drinking for 14 hours. Please put some food in your body. Exactly.
I don't understand these people who get drunk and don't want to gorge on food. Like, that's part of, I feel like those are part and parcel in my life.
I think it's because you get less drunk and they're trying to get more drunk.
I guess.
Because of divorce. Yeah.
You need some ballast.
That's what I think. So, yeah, Joan is mad about that. Later, we see the funniest scene, I think, and this is the flower mix-up scene. So, earlier when Joan is going into Lane's office, she's talking to Sandy, his receptionist, who's, like, being kind of a shitty like, she's a dick.
She's hilarious.
She's like, do you have an appointment? She's like, no, you know, and then she's like, what is this regarding? And Joan just walks in like, fuck you. Why are you doing this? And then later, we see Joan gets flowers from Lane that were supposed to go to his wife, and Sandy messed up the delivery. It is just one of the funniest scenes in
like this. Multiple laugh out loud moments.
So
in
good.
This.
Here's that scene.
Darling, I've been an ass. Kisses, Lane.
Calm down. I did send you flowers, but I also sent flowers to my wife in London. The sentiments were very different, I assure you. Sandy! Did it ever occur to you how sensitive these deliveries were?
I ordered the flowers from Rhinelanders. They assured me they were going to contact your florist in London, and somehow they mixed them up. It's not my fault.
Sandra, everyone makes mistakes. But the fact that you're the kind of person who cannot accept blame is egregious.
I don't know what that means.
It means I can't believe I hired you.
What exactly did Mrs. Harris's note say?
It said, Joan, forgive me, Lane.
You're fired. Go get your things. You'll be paid through the end of the year.
Those instructions, you understood.
It's just like perfect scene.
Mm. It's funny every time Lane yells, I've noticed. It's like he doesn't yell very often, but as soon as he raises his voice, it's like automatic laugh line.
It's really funny.
There's also the moment where he tells Peggy to get out and the secretary also leaves.
You're right. Yeah. Not you, Sandy. Yeah. Yeah. It is an incredibly funny scene and an incredibly fucked up, like, yeah, I mean, look, I'm usually watching the show going like, oh, you got fired for that, but this one I was like, Yeah, you got to fire the shit out of her. That's the worst possible mistake you can make.
That. When she read the message that got sent to his wife, I was like, ooh, yeah, that's not a hoit.
Me too. I was like, well, there goes that. I was like, how do you explain that one?
Not patching that one up.
You're just fucked up forever on that.
Well, she does. She reminds me of like, when you're at a restaurant and they bring you the wrong food and you have to be like... Yeah, hey, sorry, like you brought me the wrong thing. You're not trying to like shame the person. And then sometimes you'll get like a waiter who's like, oh no, that's what you ordered.
Right. Yeah.
And you're like, listen, neither, I'm not trying to shame you. I'm not saying I don't need you. I don't need anybody to like take responsibility. Just like,
you're not in trouble.
We can agree that something is off and we got to fix it. We don't have to, you know, we don't have to have this power struggle here.
Right. Yeah. That's why I just don't say nothing.
Yeah,
because if I was like, hey, I think you messed up this order, and they said, no, that's what you ordered, I'd be like, you're right, probably. I'm a fucking idiot. I got this high blood pressure. I can't think straight no more. Like, I will immediately back down. I am a class A bitch. So Dawn and Lane get drunk on some good shit. This is after Dawn, you know, comes home from his very depressing LA trip. They look for movies to see.
I like when Don takes the drink of Lane's fancy scotch and he's like, God, there's no bite at all. And you're just like,
I've never had smooth whiskey before.
You're drinking Canadian Club for most of your life, you freak.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't even hurt when I pee. It's just like, it's because you only have sex with people with gonorrhea.
This is like, the first non-like prohibition rock gut that you've drank.
Yeah. Yeah, so they get drunk on that, and they're looking for movies, and I really love the line where he's like, send me no flowers, and Lane just goes, no! His flowers now traumatize him. Dawn says the line, does Howdy Doody have a wooden dick? Yeah. I love answering questions that way.
Such a good... He's like, all the other colleagues have been sent home. I can do all my meanest jokes now. We can talk like guys, finally.
Yeah, finally. We can talk like we're podcasters. So they're talking about...
He also says, oh, Umbrellas of Cherbourg. It says it's a movie for lovers. And then it just smash cut to them watching Godzilla.
Yes.
It was... and Don was like, Catherine Deneuve.
Deneuve.
Like, it doesn't matter that it's in French.
Yeah, they're like, ooh, there's a hot chick in it. But then smash cut to Godzilla is incredibly funny.
I read about her measurements in the newspaper.
Yeah.
I think... In the trying to get ahead of the commenters here, I think this was a Gamera movie,
not
a Godzilla one.
Wow.
According to something I read online, Gamera was released later in 1965 and didn't make it to U.S. theaters until 1966.
Wow! Wow.
Matthew Weiner is going to be so embarrassed.
Big failure on the part of the Mad Men people. Fucking losers. So they saw Candid Gamera and they are watching it together and talking about hand jobs, and it's just like, it's a great little moment. Here is that clip.
Hand jobs.
Is that right?
What percentage do they
do? You mind?
Gotta love just doing a drunk Japanese accent at someone because they told you to be quiet because you're talking about hand jobs out loud. It's really funny.
It's the same kind of horrified laugh that you get out of Clint Eastwood's Gran Torino.
Yes, exactly. Where I'm like,
other people doing racism, and it's horrible and frowned upon. And now in our present enlightened era.
Right.
Yeah, we can laugh at it.
I'm laughing at their mistake.
Yeah, That's right. Oh, those fools, I say.
Yes.
And then I do the most Latino accent.
That's you. I definitely don't do it myself.
Yeah. No. I don't either. No, I'm good.
Okay.
I only do accents I'm allowed to do.
Scottish ones. Scottish ones.
Any white ethnic I'll do.
Vince has the market cornered on the Italian accent.
Yeah, that's right. I can't do
another thing that my 9-year-old son does a little too well as well.
Wait, it's to an Italian accent?
Yes.
Oh, good really, for him.
It's.
Does he do the excited?
I haven't told him it's not okay, but
it's
like,
okay.
It's okay.
It makes me laugh so much.
I give him the pasta pass. I don't know what you call that. Yeah. Does he do street vendor angry that an elephant is running off with his cabbage from Water for Elephants? That's a really good period.
No. There's a lot of the fingers hands together.
Yeah,
starting every sentence with that.
I love
it's
it.
The one scene in that movie that I remember where the elephant comes and steals an Italian street vendor's cabbage, and the Italian street vendor gets, "Hey, where did the elephant go with my cabbage?"
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. So they go out for steak. Lane says his wife is definitely going to leave him. They decide to go get some girls. Lane wears the steak like a belt buckle. And then they go see Finn DiTrollo or whatever from The Sopranos in his new role as nameless stand-up comic from the East Village. And Finn does some crowd work. And here's,
I have some thoughts.
Here's that scene.
Tell me, what's it like when your eyes meet across a crowded men's room? Wall Street. Does it bother your parents that he's so ugly? So we all want to know, at the end of the night, when it's just the two of you, who picks up the check?
We're not homosexuals, we're divorced!
Don't.
Did you get the next line?
No, I didn't get the next line.
I mean, my favorite thing about, first of all, my criticism of this is it feels more like modern stand-up comedy than I imagine that it feels like 1964 stand-up comedy, which was like very obnoxious. It was just like a guy going up there to prove how much, it was either a guy going up there to prove how much he had read, or it was like Jackie Gleason doing jokes about like, "Hey, you ever have smack your wife in the mouth and your hand hurts afterwards?
You ever punch a Spanish to death?" Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing that I love about it that is very accurate to like bad stand-up comedy is he does like three or four gay jokes, then Lane yells out, "We're not homosexuals, we're divorced," which, like, in that moment, like, now you have new material and you can do like better jokes about the actual situation, but he just completely ignores this new piece of context
and he continues on the gay jokes,
doing more gay jokes, because that is like, that is the ultimate like shitty stand-up comedy brain, where you're like, "Listen, I'm killing with these gay jokes. I'm
gonna ignore
the material that I've been given, and to continue giving the audience what they want in this moment."
Yeah, I don't really have an issue with any of it. If I did have an issue, it would be that it's written the way a screen like TV writer writes stand-up, which is like, you're giving the good punchline to the character that you write for, Lane. You know what I mean? Like, he gets the "we're not gay, we're divorced" line. That is the funniest line. That's everything. So to me, I was like, oh, come on. You know, this is not.
But I feel like that's not entirely uncommon.
Oh, no. It's the most uncommon thing. You mean the audience having a good line?
Well, usually the audience would be like drunk chicks at a bachelorette party.
Yeah, no, they're
like, "What? What did you say?"
Yeah, "Fuck you then, bitch." Like, that's like the best you can get out of it. Unless, I think that's in America. I'm pretty sure I've heard that if you do stand up in Ireland, you will kill yourself because the hecklers are all Irish. So they're all hilarious. I've heard that is the funniest crowds you'll ever deal with, and you should never get into a fight with them. Anyways, the two girls come, they fuck the girls, Lane pays $20. Thank you for the distraction.
It cost $25. He paid $30 because he's a gentleman.
That's right. He paid $30. He gave a tip to, I guess, Dawn. Cool.
right.
It's like, keep the change, Dawn. And you know what I like about Dawn is there's not that scene or like that, like, one instance where they do a close-up of his face and he feels offended, you know what I mean? Like, everyone else has that whenever he pays like a woman that he works with because he just slept with her, but it's like, has nothing to do with that, just a bonus. There's always that, like, you know, shot.
I don't want your dirty money.
Yeah, shot of the scene going, like, what am I, a sex worker? And Don, they didn't give that for Don, where Don didn't go, what am I, some sort of pimp? Instead, he was just like, all right, thanks for the money. And yeah, then the last scene, everything is back to normal, except it's 1965. And that's it. That's what happens in the episode. Do we have a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about that you desperately want to talk about? Matt Ufford.
Ooh. I mean, we kind of talked about all the scenes. I think for me, it's Don as Dick in California saying goodbye to Anna. Like, that's just
best.
It's really kind of what the show does best. It's
I agree.
Really, even if you put the character under magnifying glass and they kind of fall apart as not being very realistic whatsoever, mm-hmm. it's still like the like very powerfully emotional.
Yeah agreed. Vince, favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something you desperately want to talk about?
Two small things that I enjoyed. I enjoyed one of the prostitutes not being very smart.
That's always fun. What was Don's comment? Like, she didn't go to Barnard or something like that? Well,
There was that, but there was also, she's like, oh, I love your apartment. It's very masculine. And he's like, yeah, I think Norman Mailer punched a deer to death over there. And she just goes, I love deer. And then the other thing is the hillbilly joke that Greg is telling.
Oh yeah, that was
Joan,
good,
which is funny. He's talking about donkey dick. So I heard this joke as a Canadian joke, where it's two Canadians playing 20 questions, and the first one goes, "Is it edible?" And the second one goes, "Kinda." And he says, "Is it moose cock?" He's like, "Dang, how do you get it so fast?"
Yeah. It's good as Canadian. You can do it with anything.
Yeah,
he's like two Polish guys. Is it light bulbs? You know.
That reminds me. I feel like it's worth saying in that scene that Greg does one thing right, which is surprisingly stitch your finger together. But then he like totally biffs on, like, it's like filing papers for you, and she's like, "I don't file papers."
Yeah. He does not respect her or what she does at all, and desperately wants her to quit her job. But in that moment, Greg does something right, at least in not giving her an infection when he sews her finger together. So that was sweet. If I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, honestly, it is a fantastic episode. It's one of the best that we've seen, and I say that earnestly. I'm going to give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, like I said, one of my top 2-3 Mad Men episodes. And by that metric, I think I'm forced to give it a solid B+.
Oh my God. And Matt Ufford, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
B+. Guys, I liked it a lot better than you guys. Yeah, I don't see where you're getting. Yeah, it's a B+ for me.
Oh shit. Oh. We are all unanimous. It is a B+ episode of Mad Men, but you know what? It's an A+++++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Matt Ufford, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Gentlemen, I had a blast. Thanks so much for having me on.
Of course. Where can people find you?
Find me, Matt Ufford, at Blue Sky. I'm gonna post about birds and occasionally some of my work, not my work, but the people who I work with, their work from Yahoo Sports, where I
love
lead
that.
Up video there.
I love that for you, and I love that for everyone. So please click the links in the description where you can find him on Blue Sky. Matt Ufford, you were the best. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/Rockcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. It's a prep school name, you already know. And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 names this week, Vince. Do you have your prep school name hat on?
Extra big nickname giving turban.
Okay, fine. We've settled that turban is fine based on the 60s rules. And we have a few names. Let's do it now. Cameron Andrews.
Ooh, Cameron Andrews. Candrews. More like Cantdrews. This guy's not an artist. We're going to call him the Prince. after Prince Andrew, the famous pedophile.
Yeah, well, he used to be just a famous prince. Now he's famous pedophile. That's like a predator and a pedophile, because some, let's be honest, are just not predators. They're just living. All right.
Don't accidentally. I accidentally handed it to the Epstein
file. Oh, no. I accidentally handed it to pedophiles. Next is Molly Gates.
Lock the gates. We're calling her Eminem because she's Marc Maron is always. You get the connection.
Until you spelled it out for me. I literally needed it spelled out. Marc Maron, Eminem, Molly Gates. Lock the gates. Next, we have Keith Monroe.
Monroe. I like when they spell Monroe with a U. Like
yeah, that. Phonetically.
Yeah, we're calling him K Money.
K Money is a good ass name.
With a U.
Yeah. Okay, Mooney. Let's see. Two more left. Daniel Tudor. I just met her.
He's tooting everywhere. We call this guy Stern because he's the fart man.
Okay. I like it. Stern as in Daniel Stern.
Mm-hmm.
From the Wet Bandits.
Yeah.
People say I look like him.
You do.
I hate that. And finally, just one name. We got a one name king here. Billiam.
I hardly know him.
No, that didn't work. What the hell?
He's Bilious. We're calling this guy. What's a name? What are types of clouds?
Cumulus.
Yeah, we're calling this guy Cumulus because he's Bilious, like a.
Is that bilious a type of cloud?
It's a description.
I didn't know that.
Of cloud-like things.
All right, we're calling this guy Cumulus.
Yeah, plus it's got cum in it.
Yeah, it does, and that's the fun part. If you're wondering where the fun part was, that's the fun part. That was the part that was worth $8 or more. And you, of course, can get yourself a shout-out by going to patreon.com/frogcast, joining the $8 tier. If you join the ones below, that's fine. $5 tier gets you an extra episode every week. So do that. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Well, these village girls are hip, but they have needs, hopes, wants, and dreams. And the office girls are easy to get, but not so easy to make go away. The upstate waspy daughters like Betty make for some good wives. But the Protestant sense of propriety makes cheating on them cause a fight. I wish they all could be like every bird. My West Coast wife is super chill and she has no needs at all. She just sits and smiles and is happy for me. She don't exist between visits and calls. I screwed every girl I've ever met, but Anna's never judgmental. And stole his identity, yet she don't seem to give a fuck at all. I wish they all could be like an average bird. I wish they all could be like an average bird. I wish they all could be like an average bird. Sucking on a dick is a fun thing to do.
But sucking on a dong is not as much fun. Dong Draper versus Dick. Sucking on my prick. Fucking in. All right.
Hi, I'm Matt Leeds.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself. What happened?
Sorry.
Did you have a stroke?
Yeah, I did.
All right. Let's, well, you know what? We'll do it again.
Let's do it again. Yeah.